Imagine trying to prove a crime happened, but you are absolutely not allowed to examine the scene. Or, trying to study a rare astronomical event, but you're explicitly forbidden from looking through the telescope.
Right, it's impossible to get the direct evidence.
Exactly. And that is essentially the fundamental problem of causal inference that we ask macroeconomic researchers to navigate every single day. When a country adopts a massive policy like, say, joining the euro or overhauling its labor laws, we only observe the timeline where it actually happened.
Because the timeline where it didn't, the counterfactual is a ghost, it doesn't exist.
Right. And today we're looking at how to mathematically summon that ghost.
As graduate students in economics, you already know the stakes here. Causal inference is essentially this art of finding a credible substitute for that unobservable timeline. I mean, we can't exactly run a randomized controlled trial on the entire French economy.
Yeah, they would definitely not get past an ethics board or a
Yes.
central bank.
No.
Definitely not. So we have to construct an alternative reality from observational data. But recently, this new methodological fix has emerged to solve this exact problem when the data gets messy, and that is the augmented synthetic control method, or ASCM.
And that makes this deep dive your formal study guide for mastering ASCM. We're going to go well beyond the abstract theory to look at how this is actually implemented in your R environments, specifically using the AugSynth package.
Right.
And most importantly, we'll look at what happens when we test this methodology against a real-world macroeconomic integration.
But to really appreciate the augmented approach, we first have to recognize why the classic synthetic control method pioneered by Abadie and his colleagues, why that sometimes falls short.
Right, because classic SEM tries to construct that missing counterfactual strictly from the data itself, relying, entirely on untreated units. Wait, let me visualize this to make sure the foundation is clear for everyone. I always kind of picture classic SEM as casting a stunt double for a movie star. You assemble this stunt double from a weighted blend of non-treated extras. That's your donor pool.
That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah, and you want to find a specific combination of extras whose pre-treatment performance perfectly mimics the treated unit before the intervention. Once the dangerous scene happens, the actual policy treatment, the stunt double, shows us what would have happened to the star had they, not taken the lead.
Right. And taking that stunt double analogy a step further, the mathematical constraint here is that you're only allowed to combine those extras in very specific, highly restrictive ways.
Okay, what does that mean formally?
Formally, what SCM is doing is finding a convex combination of donor units to minimize pre-treatment imbalance. And a convex combination just means the weights assigned to the donors must be non-negative and they must sum precisely to one.
Ah, okay. So it's strictly an interpolation.
Exactly. It is an interpolation of the donor pool, never an extrapolation. You can't assign a negative weight to a country. But in cross-country macroeconomics, this strict mathematical constraint actually becomes a massive vulnerability.
Because the donor pools in macroeconomic panels are usually very small, right? And the structural differences between countries are vast.
Precisely. You might be trying to build a stunt double for an industrialized export powerhouse using a donor pool of smaller service-based economies.
So the treated unit often sits outside the convex hull of the donor pool.
Yes. No combination of donors can perfectly reproduce the treated unit's pretreatment path, so you're forced to accept residual imbalance.
And my assumption is that this unmatched imbalance is what completely biases the post-treatment estimate.
Oh, it completely skews the results. I
Yeah.
mean, if your synthetic counterfactual is already drifting away from the actual unit before the policy even happens, any post-treatment difference you observe is contaminated by that initial error.
Right, that makes total sense.
And this is exactly where the augmented synthetic control method, which was developed by Ben Michael, Feller, and Rothstein, where it steps in to rescue the analysis. It applies a doubly robust mechanism.
Doubly robust. Okay. How does that work in practice?
Well, it begins with that ordinary SCM gap, so the actual treated outcome minus the weighted donor outcome, and then it applies a bias correction. This correction is generated by an outcome model, which we often call a prognostic model.
And what kind of model are we talking about here?
Typically, this is a ridge regression fitted on lagged outcomes.
Okay, so if I'm picturing this doubly robust mechanism, is classic SCM kind of like laying down a broad coat of tar on a wall with a roller? And this outcome model is like a fine touch-up brush.
I like that.
Like the roller lays down the primary structure, the weights, the donors, but the brush paints over the specific spots the roller just couldn't reach, to eliminate that residual bias.
That actually visualizes the formula logic perfectly. The outcome model predicts what the residual imbalance should be based on the covariates of the treated unit compared to the covariates of the donors.
Right.
And once it predicts that expected residual bias, it simply subtracts it from the ordinary SEM estimate.
But let me push back on that for a second. Because adding layers to a model always carries some kind of risk, right?
Sure.
If we are applying this mathematical correction, what happens if the classic SEM fit is actually already perfect? Are we risking overcorrection? My intuition says that if the treated unit is already safely inside the convex hull, adding another regression layer could, I don't know, distort a perfectly good synthetic control.
You would definitely think so, but the doubly robust framework prevents that through a sort of mathematical insurance policy.
Oh, an insurance policy.
Yeah. If the pretreatment fit is already perfect, the donors already perfectly reproduce the prognostic model's prediction. Because of how the ridge regression is structured, the penalty term is driven to a very large value.
And what does that do?
It means the correction term mathematically vanishes, and ASCM simply equals SCM. It does absolutely no harm when the fit is good, but it actively rescues the estimate when the fit is poor. Wow, okay. So mathematically, the doubly robust theory is incredibly sound. But as graduate students listening to this, the real question is how we actually translate that elegant math into our environments without, you know, making a critical error. The source material for this deep dive heavily highlights the AugSynth toolkit for this.
Yes. Moving from theory to software requires really understanding the underlying logic of the package's formula architecture. Instead of just writing lines of code, you have to separate your structural baseline from your penalty mechanism.
Right. So what does that look like in the code?
The software uses a formula mini language. You define your outcome relative to a binary treatment indicator while controlling for your panel structure with specific unit and time identifiers.
Okay, standard panel setup so far.
Exactly. But the engine of the augmentation is invoked through a specific prognostic function argument.
Meaning you have to actively tell the software to use the ridge outcome model we just discussed. Otherwise, it just defaults back to the classic Abade SCM estimator. It doesn't magically augment the data just because you loaded the AugSynth package.
That's a crucial point, yes. And depending on your specific research design, that toolkit offers three distinct analytical entry points. The first is basically just single underscore AugSynth, which is for evaluating a single treated unit.
Got it.
And crucially for inference, because providing a point estimate without standard errors is meaningless in economics, this function relies on conformal inference to calculate confidence intervals.
But things get substantially more complex when you have staggered adoption across multiple treated units.
Oh, absolutely.
And that brings us to the second entry point, multi-synth, which handles multiple units adopting a policy at different times. Instead of relying on a single hard-coded intervention time, the software actually infers the adoption date for each individual unit from when their specific treatment indicator switches from 0 to 1.
And note that it requires wild bootstrap inference here, not conformal inference.
Right. But looking at the documentation for multi-synth, what really stands out to me is the partial pooling parameter. It's denoted as the Greek letter nu.
Yes. The new parameter manages a really critical bias variance trade-off in panel data. When you are evaluating multiple units, estimating completely separate synthetic controls for every single country can yield highly variable, noisy results.
Because you're treating every country like an isolated island.
Exactly. But on the other end of the spectrum, forcing one fully pooled model assumes every single country reacts identically, which obviously ignores critical macroeconomic heterogeneity.
Right. Germany doesn't react the same way Greece does.
Precisely. So the new parameter allows the algorithm to stabilize estimates by finding an optimal mathematical point between 0, which means entirely separate fits, and 1, which means a fully shared control.
You know, it feels a bit like grading essays with a rubric. Pure pooling, where the parameter is 1, is like grading every student exactly the same, regardless of their specific work.
That's a good analogy.
And no pooling, where the parameter is 0, is grading each student entirely in a vacuum. But partial pooling is grading each student individually, while borrowing a little statistical strength from the class average to stabilize any highly erratic individual grades.
Exactly. That stabilization is absolutely essential for credible inference when dealing with volatile macroeconomic data.
And there's a third entry point too, right?
Yes, AugSynth underscore multi-out. That one is designed for evaluating one treated unit across several correlated outcomes simultaneously.
So, like, if you want to evaluate both total factor productivity and the productivity gap as a joint outcome.
Right. The function calculates a single unified set of donor weights to balance all specified outcomes jointly.
Which makes deep theoretical sense. If the outcomes are fundamentally linked in the macro economy, your counterfactual should respect that correlation. You wouldn't want one synthetic stunt double for productivity and a completely different synthetic stunt double for the productivity gap.
No, you wouldn't. That would be structurally incoherent.
Okay, so we have the methodological theory and we have the software architecture.
Yeah.
But rigorous empirical practice dictates we cannot just trust these functions on unobserved real-world counterfactuals immediately.
We definitely shouldn't.
Right. We need to validate them on data where the true counterfactual is mathematically known. Let's look at the simulation stress test provided in the study guide.
So the simulation creates a 20-country, 24-year panel running from the year 2000 to 2023. We have 15 never-treated donor countries and 5 treated units experiencing staggered adoption.
Okay.
The crucial detail here is how these treated units are positioned within the data space. The first 4 units, C01 through C04, are generated strictly inside the donor hall.
Meaning a perfect convex combination exists for them.
Exactly. But the 5th unit, C05, is deliberately generated outside the hall. And the authors injected a known negative treatment effect of negative 0.35 per year for C05.
So we have the absolute ground truth?
We do. When we look at the results for the first unit, the one inside the hall, both classic SCM and ASCM accurately recover the true effect. The true average effect is positive 2.600, and both methods estimate roughly positive 2.65.
Returning to the insurance policy principle we discussed earlier, for that first unit, the Ridge penalty evaluates to a massive number, yeah, around 803, right?
Yes.
And that penalty essentially turns the augmentation off. Because the standard SCM fit was already highly accurate, the methodology basically recognized it didn't need to intervene.
It's beautifully efficient that way.
But here is where the simulation reveals the real stakes of this entire methodology. When we look at unit C05, the unit deliberately placed outside the whole classic SCM completely breaks down.
It fails completely.
It estimates an effect of positive 0.335. But the true effect is negative 1.225. It gets the magnitude wrong. And far more alarmingly, it gets the sign completely wrong.
Which is disastrous.
In macroeconomics, reporting a policy as a net positive when it actually caused a severe contraction that's a catastrophic analytical failure. If a central bank or a finance ministry acted on that SCM estimate, they would be expanding a policy that is actively harming the economy.
It is the absolute nightmare scenario for an applied researcher. Because C05 is outside the hull, the convex combination of donors just cannot match its pre-treatment trajectory.
Right.
The synthetic control drifts away from the actual unit before the treatment even begins. And that unmatched pre-treatment bias completely swamps the true causal signal.
But the Ridge ASCM estimator rescues the analysis here. It successfully recovers an estimate of negative 1.316, which is incredibly close to the true negative 1.225.
Right, and it does this by closing that pretreatment gap.
The scaled L2 imbalance drops from 0.34 under plain SCM down to 0.12 under ASCM. So if there is one golden rule to write down from the simulation for the grad students listening, it has to be about monitoring that imbalance. My takeaway is that if your L2 imbalance is high, standard SCM is essentially just a random number generator.
Honestly, yes. The operational mandate for researchers is to always read your pre-treatment fit. Specifically, scrutinize your scaled L2 imbalance. If your synthetic control drifts before the treatment occurs, the classic SCM estimate is fatally flawed. Ridge augmentation becomes strictly necessary to correct that residual bias.
Validate on truth, then trust on data. Having seen the estimator actually recover known parameters in a simulation, we can evaluate its performance on a massive real-world macroeconomic question. The source material replicates Papayanonu's 2021 study. Did joining the European Monetary Integration actually raise total factor productivity, or TFP?
And this is one of the most debated questions in modern European economic history.
Oh, absolutely.
The replication utilizes a data set comprising 36 countries, 12 founding Euro members, and 24 non-Euro donors spanning from 1980 to 2017. To test the methodology, the analysis begins with a single unit, Germany.
And using classic SEM, Germany's actual TFP runs above its synthetic counterfactual after 1999. It shows an average positive effect of 0.133 TFP units.
Right.
And when the analysis switches to the Ridge ASCM estimator, the result is nearly identical, an effect of positive 0.127.
Which demonstrates the quiet premium of our insurance policy in action.
Oh.
The scaled L2 imbalance for Germany was already exceptionally low, dropping only slightly from 0.301 to 0.292. Because Germany was well within the donor hull, the augmentation confirmed the original SCM result rather than fundamentally altering it.
There's also a really fascinating robustness check here regarding market anticipation. The Maastricht Treaty was signed in 1992, well before the euro's actual launch in 1999.
Yes, the anticipation effect.
Right. If markets price in the integration early, your 1999 treatment date is compromised because behavior has already changed. But when the intervention date is moved back to 1992, the estimate remains remarkably stable at positive 0.138.
And that stability significantly strengthens the causal interpretation. It suggests the positive productivity effect is robust whether you date the treatment to the initial institutional commitment or the physical currency launch.
But Germany is just one country. And evaluating a massive currency union requires looking at the aggregate. When the methodology moves to the multi-unit function to evaluate all 12 founding members simultaneously, it yields a pooled average effect of negative 0.016.
Yes, the multi-unit analysis.
And honestly, as an analyst looking at a pooled average of negative 0.016, my immediate conclusion is that the euro had absolutely no aggregate effect on productivity. It looks like it's statistical zero. If I just read the abstract, I'd assume the policy was a complete wash.
Well, I would firmly push back on that immediate conclusion.
Okay, wow.
While the summary statistic looks like a zero, deconstructing the dynamics over time reveals a very different macroeconomic reality. The pooled effect path is completely flat before 1999, indicating no problematic pre-trend.
Right, which is good.
But following the euro's introduction, the effect jumps to positive 0.39 by the year 2000.
Oh, wow. So a massive early gain. A productivity boom.
A very significant boom. However, during the sovereign debt crisis from 2008 to 2014, that effect slides drastically into negative territory.
Ah, I see.
The early productivity gains and the severe late period losses simply cancel each other out when compressed into a single raw average across multiple decades. The vital methodological lesson here is that in multi-country panel data, pooled averages actively obscure dynamic heterogeneity.
You really have to respect the dynamic paths of treatment effects. I mean, a roller coaster might start and end at the exact same elevation, but that definitely doesn't mean the ride was flat.
That's a very vivid way to put it, yes.
And we see a similar need for nuance when evaluating multiple outcomes for Germany. By balancing the synthetic control on both TFP and the productivity gap versus the United States, we get a much more coherent macroeconomic narrative.
Right.
TFP rises by positive 0.116, and the productivity gap narrows by negative 0.151. Germany actually moves significantly closer to the technological frontier.
Joint estimation basically confirms the productivity gains were not just an artifact of choosing one specific outcome measure. And ultimately, when assessing the replication success of the ASCM estimates against Papioanu's original classic SCM results, the analysis yields a 0.74 rank correlation.
Which feels like a very strong qualitative replication.
It is.
You wouldn't expect exact numerical replication across entirely different statistical estimators, but the qualitative realities hold up perfectly. The signs, the relative rankings, and the dynamic paths, like the large early gains for France and the Netherlands, followed by the devastating post-crisis reversals for Greece and Portugal, all firmly confirm the original paper's findings.
It demonstrates that modern augmented methods do not necessarily overturn classic findings. Rather, they place those findings on a much more rigorous mathematical foundation, particularly when you're dealing with units that are difficult to match.
So synthesizing this study guide for everyone listening, applying synthetic controls in your own research requires a strict order of operations. First, always validate your estimators on simulated ground truth to ensure they can actually recover the parameters you care about.
Absolutely.
Second, treat ridge augmentation as a doubly robust safety net and insurance policy rather than some magical free lunch.
Yeah.
And third, diligently monitor your scaled L2 imbalance to detect pre-treatment drift.
And finally, when dealing with staggered adoption or multiple units, respect the dynamic path of the treatment effects over time. Because, as we saw, pooled averages will actively hide the most important economic stories. Applying these principles really elevates causal inference from mere curve fitting to genuine structural analysis.
It has been a rigorous deep dive, but I want to leave you with a final theoretical question to ponder on your own. We established that the augmented synthetic control method uses regression to mathematically correct for treated units that fall entirely outside the characteristics of our donor pool.
Right.
But if we are estimating counterfactuals for entities that look nothing like our control subjects, does this methodology mathematically blur the line between finding a natural experiment in the data and artificially constructing one with an algorithm? How far can we really trust an equation to paint a counterfactual universe that never historically existed in any of the underlying data?
That is a profound question.
Something for you to think about next time you try to summon the ghost of a timeline that never happened.